Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Up where we belong, where the eagles fly on a mountain high. In Buffy St. Marie's anthem, which could have been written about the subject of today's Route 51, a 300-foot-tall outcropping of ancient quartzite that rises above the countryside of Wood County, now commonly called Powers Bluff. It's a popular ski hill and winter recreation site, but there is much more to Powers Bluff, as you will find out today. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guest for the next hour is Robert Birmingham, an archaeologist and author of Skunk Hill, a Native Ceremonial Community in Wisconsin. It's a story of a Potawatomi village called Takakik, resettled on an ancient site in 1905 and providing a shelter for a group of the Potawatomi people who were fleeing the oppressive U.S. Indian policy of the time and making an effort to keep their ancient culture alive. You'll hear about how today's ski hill is still a sacred site for some of their descendants who practice the big drum religion and drum dance there. It's a period that has been called by Native Americans the Great Suppression, and we'll look into that as well. You'll also hear today from Mike Hoffman, a Menominee historian and linguist from Stevens Point. Now, as always, we welcome your phone calls if you'd like to join the conversation. Our lines are open at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Maybe you're somebody who frequents the ski hill at Powers Bluff. Maybe you've gone up there and seen some of these sacred Indian sites. Maybe you've got questions about the history. 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Bob Birmingham, thanks so much for being with us today.
Yes, good morning.
Now, most people in central Wisconsin know this place. Powers Bluff is a ski hill and winter recreation site, but as I just said in the introduction, it's much more than that.
Yes. In fact, it played an important role in local Native American history because it was also a place that a community was established about 1905, a community that thrived through the 1920s, and the community was what I call a ceremonial community. It was occupied by people who sought to continue traditional Native ways and to practice a new spiritual way that was called the originally called the Dream Dance, now called the Big Drum, which emphasized Native values because at the time it literally was illegal for Native people to practice their religion, speak their language, and continue cultural practices on reservations.
So that's why they had to go to an off-reservation site like Skunk Hill?
Correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. And the book is titled Skunk Hill, A Native Ceremonial Community in Wisconsin. The author is Robert Birmingham. It's published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. You can find out more about it at wisconsinhistory.org. And Bob, we got you right away because I just saw the press release for this book about a week and a half ago. And obviously, you think that this is important enough that you wanted to write a book about it. Why is it so important?
For two reasons. One is that it contains an extremely important lesson for us all, and that is that there was a time not too long ago when the United States government, with the assent of the American people, literally made it illegal for some of the population, and ironically the indigenous population, to practice their religion. And that is a lesson that we must continue to pay attention to even today when, discrimination on with regard to people's religion continues to be an issue.
How much?
Second, go on, please. It does reflect a very interesting and pertinent story about how Native people sought to preserve traditional ways in the face of great oppression.
How much research went into this book?
Well, you know, a considerable amount of research, stemming from actually research I have been conducting over several decades. I first became aware of these off-reservation ceremonial communities 20 years ago in researching some other sites in Marathon County, Wisconsin, in Taylor County, Wisconsin, and it followed, the research followed the activities of people who had introduced this new way, this new spiritual way called the Big Drum, and were actually creating small ceremonial communities that attracted many thousands of people, again, off-reservation. At the time of early research, I had been I recognized the name Skunk Hill because it was frequently brought up as the major ceremonial community. The most recent research was facilitated by the fact that around year 2000, a controversy arose at Powers Bluff itself. Powers Bluff is a park, is a county park. And as you mentioned, it is used as a winter recreational area. A controversy arose, however, about park plans to cut trees, to manage the forest, and also to expand or update a winter recreational area.
Now your book, Bob, starts out with a meeting in the summer of 2001 and a violent thunderstorm that's tied to these plans. Tell us about that meeting, who was there, and why you were there.
Well, I was there in my capacity as state archaeologist at the time. The controversy about management of the park had highlighted the fact that this had been a village area, and that the descendants of the people who lived there were still living in the area, and were certainly cognizant of the fact that there were burials there, there were several cemeteries and so on, and so people became very concerned that park plans would be somehow desecrate the site, damage burials, and so on. So as controversy came to my office, my office offered its services to help locate areas of historic interest, you know, the burial grounds and so on, specifically so that people could discuss possible damage that in a more objective point. So at that point, the controversy had also involved the Prairie Potawatomi of Kansas. The Prairie Potawatomi of Kansas are actually are descendants of people who once lived in Wisconsin but had been removed.
That was back in the 1800s during this time when. Okay.
Yep. And during the treaty era, they had been removed to Kansas. Some people, some Potawatomi people, and other people from other tribes, like the Ho-Chunk, who had also been removed, refused to go and sort of fled into the woods, including areas like Wood County, to practice a more traditional way of life. So some of those people in Wood County in vicinity actually had been enrolled in the Kansas Reservation. So the modern Kansas Potawatomi had a great interest in this, and especially because it was a considerable number of their own people who fled the reservation in the late 19th century and early 20th century to found Skunk Hill, along with the Potawatomi and other people, Ho-Chunk, who had not fled. So they had considerable interest in this. And so the meeting at that time had been between county officials and the different Native American groups, as well as other interested parties, to discuss future plans of the park and what could be done to preserve those other areas.
And they were
upset. And so I was there, again, officially as a state archaeologist to sort of facilitate the matter by identifying the historical areas.
Now, the opponents or the critics of the Wood County plan, they were upset about the tree thinning project. But as you write, there was a violent thunderstorm that night, which kind of thinned out a lot of the trees anyway, ironically. So here you've got people complaining about the tree thinning, and this violent storm comes through, knocks over a bunch of the trees, and then you find out, and I found this really interesting, that the damage from the storm unearthed some valuable archaeological information for you.
Yeah, as I wrote, I think the sentiment was that this violent storm reflected, the sort of the anger of the moment, about the tree cutting and other improvements. But as I pointed out, it did, in fact, help us to locate an area. Some of the trees had fallen in an area east of the village itself that helped us understand more of the history of the area. So I found that ironic, and that's how I started the book, in saying that actually the storm had revealed history previously hidden, just like the controversy in general, brought to public attention a history of Native people that most non-Indian people are unfamiliar with.
So you had a lot of angry people at that meeting, concerned about Powers Bluff, its use as a winter recreation area, plans for expansion, thinning trees. How receptive do you feel the officials in the Wood County government were to their concerns and in maintaining and preserving these historic sites?
Well, first of all, let me clarify. Anger is probably an exaggeration. People were concerned, but throughout the controversy, people were always very reasonable and literally just wanted to discuss the matters. This had been a surprise to the park officials and Wood County officials, so that initially led to some defensiveness and so on. But as all of the people started to discuss things and understand each other's perspectives, the dialogue created, I thought, a very positive working relationship, and especially because now there was historical research being conducted, identifying and bringing to light the history, which obviously had some very positive results in terms of public understanding. The park gave us a great cooperation in doing some investigations, and through time, I think Wood County in general became to greatly respect the Native perspectives and the fact that this was an important historic site for Wood County.
Well, Robert Birmingham is our guest today. He's an archaeologist and the author of a brand new book, Skunk Hill, a Native Ceremonial Community in Wisconsin, a community that was located on what most of us know as Powers Bluff, a popular ski hill in Wood County. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Jim Force of Wausau writes on our Facebook page, "Beautiful spot. The Potawatomi recognize that."
Yes, it is a it is a very engaging place, and one can see immediately visiting it that it would be an important a place that people would you know, sort of attribute a great deal of significance to. However, for the people that made the village of Skunk Hill, it was not actually a very good place to live. It's mostly rock, and at the time it was surrounded by many farms, and the people took advantage of that by actually working with the farmers to provide income and so on. But it doesn't have a great deal of abundant natural resources that one could use for food.
How many people lived there at the time?
Well, in about 1910, we have records for about 80 people.
Okay.
And that's a good figure for the early time. Through time, however, the population dwindled. Again, because I said it was not a particularly good place to grow a lot of food or hunt a lot of food and so on. So the population dwindled after a time, and especially after basically the repression, the outside repression, began to soften.
And that was thanks to President Roosevelt and the New Deal. There was an act passed in the early 30s, which allowed Native people to practice their religion and to live according to their ways.
Yes. Yeah, it was called the Indian Reorganization Act, and it was called the New Deal for Indian people. What had happened is that since the 1870s, a number of federal policies had been enacted, some of them by well-meaning non-Indian people who thought that the best way for Native people to prosper was to force them to live much like the rest of the Americans, basically force them to be absorbed into Native American society. And one of the acts in the 1880s, actually, had the intent of doing away with reservations and carving them up into individual land holdings and giving these to individual people so that they could become farmers or ranchers like their natives. And the idea here was to undermine the communal nature of Native American worldview. That is, we own the land and its resources in common.
This was the Dawes. This was the Dawes Act, correct?
Because by the 1920s, most of that land had, in fact, passed out of the hands of Native Americans, in the hands of white people, and in fact led to great impoverishment of Native people.
So a lot of the Indian land that was given to them in these treaties ended up being taken away when they carved them into individual parcels, and the Native American people, not able to make a living on what was often poor farmland without the implements they needed, they ended up selling it to white people. And lo and behold, there's no longer land being held by the Indians, certainly not by tribes communally.
Yeah, exactly right. And even in the beginning, the lands, which were carved up generally in about 160 acres, and given to individual tribal members, that land exceeded the acreage exceeded the number of individuals. So much of the land was sold off immediately.
Now this was
to white families and ranchers. So again, the idea here was to force the Native people to become more individually oriented, and force them into the mainstream. And to emphasize that, then they also passed policies to force them to become Christians, to force them to abandon their language, and their former worldviews, including the religion.
So you had
policy lasted to the the late 1920s before the disaster, the pain and suffering, and the loss of Indian land had become so clear that politicians in Washington decided this is not the way that America should proceed in its policies.
So Bob Birmingham, you had children taken from their parents. They were sent to boarding schools so they could assimilate and lose the ancient ways. You had Native American religious ceremonies being banned. They couldn't speak the old language. And all of that was happening on the reservations, which is why people moved off reservation to places like what we now call Powers Bluff, Skunk Hill, or Takakik at the time, because it was easier to keep those old ways alive when you're not on the reservation where you've got all that pressure from the U.S. government.
Correct. And the community of Skunk Hill had a specific focus, too, within that context. In the late 1870s, a new spiritual way developed probably out in the Great Plains, a new vision based on traditional ways was introduced by apparently a young woman who had visions that if a ceremony was practiced involving a communal drum, and a code of ethics was introduced that people would follow, that native peoples among themselves would find peace, and that the whites would recognize that.
The tribes were often warring against each other, correct? You had the Sioux, this Sioux woman called Tail Feather Woman, or
yes, correct. Yeah, that's in tradition. She's called Tail Feather Woman. Yes, and the settlement pressure through time, as we all know, had created a sort of domino effect where people, native peoples, were pushed onto the lands of other native peoples, and out in especially the Great Plains, there had been a great deal of warfare created by white settlement.
So you had the Sioux of western Minnesota and South Dakota, bitter enemies with the Ojibwe of Wisconsin, and here comes this visionary Sioux woman with a concept of a big drum, which would be beaten, a sacred object, beaten by many people from many different tribes, reinforcing the concept of brotherhood and bringing peace between the tribes.
Correct. And as a result of that, it was taught that the whites would see that and respect it, and this whole concept of peace among all peoples.
When the whites saw the tribes no longer warring with one another, at peace with one another, cooperating, did that inspire the white people in the U.S. government, or did it scare them to death?
Originally, it scared people. Because about the same time that this new vision of a young woman was the time of the ghost dance on the Great Plains, which originated from the same concerns, that is, cultural stress, a vision for returning to traditional ways and so on, rejection of vices introduced by the Europeans, and so on. So that was occurring. But also, you had much violence on the plains that made Eastern people very frightened of Native gatherings, of Native spiritual movements, and so on. So when this new dance ceremony arose, white people often panicked. This new drum ceremony was in fact introduced in Wisconsin in 1878.
And Skunk Hill later became a spot on Powers Bluff in Wood County where this was practiced. Bob Birmingham, I've got to take a quick break. We will be back with more. We're talking to Bob Birmingham, who is the author of a new book on the history of what we now call Powers Bluff in Wood County, a settlement, a Native American settlement called Skunk Hill. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Gail Ambrosius Chocolatier and Von Steele Winery. You, too, can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
You for the eagles, the visions and the dreams, the visions and the dreams.
That's Bill Miller taking us into our next segment on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We are talking to Robert Birmingham, an archaeologist and author of a new book about the hidden history of Powers Bluff in Wood County. The book is called Skunk Hill, a Native Ceremonial Community in Wisconsin, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. I'm Glenn Mobrig. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Paul DeMain of Indian Country Communications writes on our Facebook page, "I have been there many times with members of the Young family and others that lived there. Frank Young moved his group there after living at Big Farm, Little Farm in Taylor County, to the north of there near Perkinstown, where some of the last residents of that village are buried. Interesting history, beautiful spot, great people despite the hardships that the U.S. government and citizens put this band of people through." Bob Birmingham, your reaction to Paul DeMain's comments?
Well, he's absolutely correct, and including the history of the place itself. Skunk Hill had previous, or I should say, it was preceded by previous ceremonial communities. He mentions the name Young, which is prominent in the history of both Skunk Hill and previous events. There was an individual who had the name of John Young, who was a follower of this new spiritual movement, and he began to form ceremonial communities, as Paul mentioned, near Perkinstown, and even an earlier one in Marathon County, devoted to the practice of this spiritual movement. And there, Young had cooperated with other tribes, principally the Ojibwa, in the development of these communities. Young himself was to end up at a place called McCord in Oneida County, which was the last of the great ceremonial communities. People were living there into the 1940s.
So let's, Bob, let me interrupt you just a second
His brothers and so on moved to Skunk Hill where they continued the ceremony.
Bob, let me interrupt you so that we can get kind of a handle on where all these places are. We're talking
yep.
about the Big Eau Plaine Ceremonial Community. Now, that's near Roselleville in Marathon County. That was established in 1876. You've got the Indian Farms Drum Dance Community in Taylor County. And there, I guess there was two places near there, a Potawatomi village headed by John Young, and then a mile away, an Ojibwe village headed by Paul Whitefish. And then finally, further north in Oneida County, McCord. Now, that's near the city of Tomahawk, about 15 miles south of the Lac du Flambeau Reservation. So
yes, and those succeeded one another, but at the same time, we see then in about 1905, a number of people from the Kansas reservation who had connections to Wisconsin and who became followers of the Dream Dance moved to Wisconsin to form Skunk Hill. John Young also had a bit to do with that in that he was the one who introduced this new spiritual movement, the Dream Dance, to the Kansas reservation during one of his many visits to that place.
Yeah, and this guy, Paul Whitefish, in the Ojibwe village in Taylor County, he was a pretty influential guy. There's an exhibit devoted to him in Medford at the local Historical Society Museum.
Yes, yes, yes. He was a principal. I suspect that it was through him originally that the Dream Dance may have been introduced. Because the Sioux introduced to the Dream Dance to the Ojibwa first, and Paul Whitefish was an Ojibwa, so he was an important person in this whole story. Coming from the Ojibwa,
are there drum dance rings in any of these other communities in McCord or in the Indian Farms? Drum
yes.
dance community
yes.
and Big Eau Plaine.
A distinctive part of this movement was the ceremonies with regard to the drum, oratory, dances, other ceremonies that took place within a specially prepared circular ring. Oftentimes these were had earthen berms around them, but most characteristically also had low fences around them. And the vestiges of these dance rings that are very characteristic of the Dream Dance, now the Big Drum, are at these other communities, as well as Skunk Hill, where two rings are still visible.
And Skunk Hill, because of these ceremonies, these intertribal ceremonies, attracted people that weren't just part of the Potawatomi people, correct? They attracted
well,
them
yeah,
from
correct.
Other tribes?
And again, the ceremony involved originally Ojibwa people, and then the ceremony passed to Potawatomi people, Menominee people, Ho-Chunk people, and so on. And in that context, there was a great deal of intermarriage between these people. So a large number of the people at Skunk Hill, for example, were Potawatomi origin, but other people were Ho-Chunk, later on Menominee, and so on. So this was a pan-tribal a development, and the people had intermarried from several tribes.
And this is
living
where
in the area, but also interestingly. The ceremonies at Skunk Hill and even at the other communities attracted visitors from as far away as Kansas. The Kansas people would come on trains, cars, and so on for periodic ceremonies to touch base with their relatives and to participate with these ceremonies. So sometimes thousands of people would show up for periodic ceremonies from throughout Wisconsin and as far away as Kansas.
I think this is a good point to bring in the observations of a member of another tribe. Mike Hoffman is a linguist and an historian, a Menominee elder who lives in Stevens Point, who's familiar with the site and how important it was to his relatives. Bob, this is about a five-minute interview that I recorded the day before yesterday. Let's listen to it, and then we'll come back and get your observations, okay?
Yes, thank you.
Well, I know that's not the proper name that the people used who occupied the hill. That name would have been Tuquakik, as I know it. Tuascotau means clearing in the woods, and Spaki is a hill, and Spakik mean like on it, the hill. So Tuquakik, clearing on the hill, that was the name that the people used.
What people were they? What Native American tribes were associated with this site?
Well, there were a lot of Potawatomi people, primarily Potawatomi. But there were Ho-Chunk people, or as some would say, Winnebago. There were Ojibwa people and Menominee people, and there were a couple Oneidas. These people came there to escape oppression from the government. They didn't want to go along with the Indian agents' schedule on the reservation of attending church and school and giving up the old ways.
What sorts of things happened at this site?
Well, the leaders way back who returned to the hill, it's always been occupied throughout time, their return from Kansas after they were displaced, Potawatomi leaders, and they brought with them the Big Drum religion. And the Big Drum religion was a society of dancers and dreamers, a way to connect all Indian people with a good mind as one and not be warring amongst each other or squabbling, but to connect as one and a way to pray to the Creator.
What sorts of ceremonies were used for that?
The ceremonies are pretty much private ceremonies. There were spring ceremonies, fall ceremonies, and to get into too much detail, probably you would land me in hot water with some of the members. It's pretty much like a Masonic temple religion or something comparative, you know, where the inner workings are kept amongst the people and not really put out there.
The people who lived at this site, what are their descendants doing now?
A lot of them are just melded into society here. They work at various positions around. One of the fellows I know, he worked for the county of Wood County for a long time. Another man I know became a lawyer. Some were loggers. A lot of the people worked cranberry marshes. They just had to survive.
And is this site still considered sacred to them?
Some of the people still hold it sacred. There were dance rings there where the big drum ceremonies took place, and there were three dance rings there, which there's a remnant of yet today.
The site right now is called Powers Bluff, and it's used as a ski hill. How do those who view the site as sacred, how do they view its present use?
Not in the best light. In order to construct the parking lot, ski hill, and all the other recreational uses that are done today by the county, a lot of bulldozing and moving of things was done, and it is said that there were burials that were disturbed, and the sacred sites were pretty much not respected and paved over. And so it's not really viewed as a really good thing that what happened. There's a lot of plants and a lot of things up there on that old site that don't exist down below. That is an ancient piece of granite. I believe it's one of the oldest sites of granite that exists. I mean, that it raised up as high as it is there.
Mike Hoffman, is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, I believe that people should have a chance to be heard and the site be viewed as still a sacred site. There's some places there where I think should be just left alone. It's been a struggle. I've attended meetings and I've attended different ceremonies and things up there that just hard to imagine what has happened. Kind of like going to a sacred Christian religious area and desecrating it by knocking down certain things and doing activities that aren't considered religious. I think it would be best if we could preserve a lot of that, of the old site there, and just let it be.
That's Mike Hoffman, a Menominee elder and linguist and historian who lives in Stevens Point, talking about the top of Powers Bluff in Wood County, a community known as Skunk Hill. We're talking to Bob Birmingham, an archaeologist and author of the book Skunk Hill, A Native Ceremonial Community in Wisconsin. It's just been released by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. Bob, your reaction to what you just heard?
I'd like to point out one very positive thing that's come out of the original controversy and dialogue between all the people is that Wood County Parks, in fact, have changed plans for the area in which the village and cemeteries was located. The ski recreation, winter recreation areas on the north side of the hill, where there was no village area or burials or anything like that. And as Mr. Huffman pointed out, however, on top of the hill where there were and still is remnants of the village, that is where the parking lots are for the ski areas and so on, and creates a little tension there. But the park now has, Wood County now has, developed a plan, and they have obtained a considerable acreage of land north of Skunk Hill and plan now to transfer the parking areas and the winter recreation focus to the north of the park, away from the village area. And in the meanwhile, too, we also put site, the old village and adjacent areas, on the National Register of Historic Places. So that creates preservation opportunities. And we have found now that the Wood County in the park is very much respecting the remains of the village and its importance to contemporary Native American people.
So the concerns have been heard. We're going to take another short break. When we come back, we'll talk about the interaction of the people at Skunk Hill with the surrounding white population with Robert Birmingham, author of Skunk Hill, A Native Ceremonial Community in Wisconsin. We'll also be taking more of your calls at 1-800-780-9742, or could have put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it on the air. But first, here's Mike Hoffman again with a portion of the Menominee Creation Mix. You will hear him speaking the ancient language and also giving you a modern translation in English.
When Grandfather made the earth, he also made the sun and the stars. He then created the many spirit beings and gave them the form of animals and birds. The animals were the underground beings. The principal underground being is the great silver-white bear. The birds, mostly eagles and hawks, are the thunders, the sky dwellers.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include the Edward J. Okray Foundation, Bernie's Rock Shop, and St. Mary's University Winona. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from the Wausau River District, encouraging communities to support small businesses and shop local during Small Business Saturday, downtown Wausau on November 28th. Experience the unexpected. WausauRiverDistrict.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're back with Robert Birmingham, the author of a brand new book, Skunk Hill, a Native Ceremonial Community in Wisconsin, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. We are down to our last few minutes of the program, and we have a call from Dave in Rothschild. Dave, you're on Route 51 with Bob Birmingham.
Yeah, good morning. I just love your show. I kind of tuned in a little late. Just wanted to say I was raised just a few miles away from there, and that's where I learned to ski. There was a toboggan slide years ago, and to this day, I think the hiking there is much more interesting than Red Mountain, because in Powers Bluff, there's numerous rocky crags with wildflowers, and it's just much more interesting. And I wanted to say, too, that about 10 years ago, my sister, who has a number of Native American Indians, for any friends, they were fighting the Wood County push to expand the ski area to, cut down more trees. And in befriending them, they told her that there's other sacred sites there that you may or may not want to know, the public to know, but they are there. And that's why they're so angry about them cutting the trees and expanding the parking and the skiing area.
All right, Dave, we're down to our last few minutes. Thanks so much for the call. And Bob Birmingham, your reaction to what you just heard.
It is a significant place for everybody in the area, and many people have fond memories of using the area for skiing and so on. As I mentioned, plans are in the works, to take the pressure off the ancient site itself.
Go on.
Many of those issues will be resolved.
He mentioned the place is
extremely important to all the people, but I think the focus of my book is to point out that this is not only significant to Native people, but plays a very important part in American history in general.
And he mentioned the interesting plants on Powers Bluff. Mike Hoffman also mentioned the importance of medicinal plants on the top of Powers Bluff.
Yes, there are plants there that are still gathered for medicine purposes, and had always been. I should also mention that the eastern part of Powers Bluff Park also contains a beautiful forest of sugar maple trees. That is a Wisconsin natural area maintained by the Wisconsin Natural Resources. It's a beautiful park in many respects.
Sugar maple was important to the local Indian economy too.
Yes, sugar maple extraction the extraction of maple syrup always important in Native cultures, both because it was a great place for families to gather in spring, celebrate the warm weather, and to make lovely little treats from the sugar. But also, Native people, including those at Skunk Hill, used as a source of income. They obtained the maple syrup and sold it to local non-Indian people, or bartered for necessary goods and services.
What is the future of Powers Bluff, Bob Birmingham? Will its Native American identity become a more important part of its identity as a central Wisconsin attraction?
Yes, with all the preservation efforts that have been made over the years, it is going to continue to rise in its importance as a reflection of Native American and Wisconsin history. And as I mentioned, Wood County itself is taking steps to relocate recreational areas from the site itself. And we hope, and we've been discussing this, that is, Native people and myself have been discussing this for years, that at one day there could be some interpretation of the site for visitors that explain its importance.
Bob Birmingham, thanks so much for being with us. It's been a fascinating hour. Bob Birmingham, author of a new book on Skunk Hill.
The reservation road. And just for that one moment, we'll be racing with the wind. And the sound of horses thundering, they'll echo one.
We want to thank today's guest, Robert Birmingham, archaeologist and author of Skunk Hill, a native ceremonial community in Wisconsin, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. You can find out more at wisconsinhistory.org. Thanks also to Menominee Nation historian and linguist Mike Hoffman. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Dean Kallenbach, and our on-air producers, Jane Ritger and Lori Frazier. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music and audio segments today by Sean Hopper, Buffy St. Marie, the Menominee Nation, Peter Phippen, and Bill Miller. Next Thursday morning on Route 51, we take a break for the Thanksgiving holiday. We will return the following week. Remember to follow us on Facebook. You can hear this show in its entirety Friday night, tomorrow at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town. Granddad's hand, he was pointing to the promised land.